This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Together for the next 4 hours.
That's right.
The other 20, that's your responsibility, and I'm sure you'll handle it well.
Yeah, don't dump that on us, man. Four is hard enough.
We go through, you know, what was that the thing that you did with the WWE, Hell in a Cage?
Well,
to Hell put these cell. 4 hours together.
I guess you're not going to be in charge of naming things. Hell in a Cell.
Oh. It's not that hard.
But it's a cage. It's really not a cell.
I know, but it's Michael, a cell.
A cage doesn't have a closed top. That's right.
I mean, if you use words as weapons, as tools, I mean, you just
and
drop the hammer
words
on your foot.
Tools, but as weapons. All
you drop the hammer on your foot.
Sad.
I like wrestling.com.
Any ideas for the name? Oh, I got one. How about Hell in a Cage? No, we'll get back to you. Now, don't be discouraged, Michael. We'll get back to you.
How about Hell in a Troy? This is so Jets-like. Only this could happen to the Jets. Paul Feinbaum, who is one of the, if not the most respected voice of college sports, what he says is 99.9% of the time absolute fact, truth, the real deal. He said a while ago, maybe 2 months ago, there's no way that Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence is going to play a senior year in college. He's coming out. That's it. He was bored last year.
Yeah.
He does not come from a family of money. He's not like Peyton Manning, who could afford to go back to Tennessee because daddy has money. Well, this came out about 45 minutes ago. Trevor Lawrence is leaving the door open about his football future, despite previously saying he planned on heading to the NFL after this his junior season. My mindset has been that I'm going to move on, Lawrence said today. But who knows? There's a lot of things that could happen. That's all about the Jets. That's all it is.
Yeah, of course it is.
It's all about the Jets. He's not thinking about coming back for senior year. You know what he's doing? He's giving himself some options. He's giving himself some leverage. Because if he decides there's nothing worse in life than playing quarterback for the Jets and they have the number one pick, this gives him a little bit of an escape hatch. Or his representatives could tell Joe Douglas, he's not going to declare if you guys are picking him. He's just not. So this is what he did today. This is how bad the Jets have been right now. Because enough people have been in his ear to say, that place kills quarterbacks.
Yep.
They kill quarterbacks. It's a quarterback slaying team. Now he's giving himself options to come back. It's amazing, Don. Just when you think you hit rock bottom, you drill a little more, and there's more bottom.
But here's the interesting thing to me. I would be very comfortable to say there is zero shot he goes back to Clemson. Zero. Because you can get hurt. You saw what happened to Tua. By getting hurt, probably cost him a chance to be the number one overall pick, right? You could suffer a catastrophic injury and knock yourself into the second round. He's not going to do that. What he's going to do is he's going to pull an Eli. And he's going to say, I'm not playing. And you got to trade me. And the only negative to do that is that it's a PR hit. Because you come across as a bad guy. And let's face it, as good a guy as Eli was, that moment did not reflect well on him or the Manning family that he pulled that on San Diego. But you get up from it. And I got news for you. I bet you if we ran it up the poll today, I'm not sure Jet fans would be mad at him if he did it. I think Jet fans understand. Because they hate their team. So I think that's what you do. You just let it be known. You have your agent when you get one when you graduate or when your junior year is done, and you call the Jets and say, listen, do not draft him. He's not going to play for your team. And force the Jets to make a deal. Now, they could pull an Ernie Accorsi, you know, what Ernie wanted to do and draft him anyway and just
That's
force him to
do.
Play.
Yep.
But I don't think that would happen. I think that they would have to probably deal the pick.
No way. And
you can understand it.
You either play for us or you don't play. That would be my message to him. So that's what, of course, he wanted to do when he was leading the Baltimore Colts, and they traded Elway out from under him because he knew Ernie's a baseball guy because John Elway kept saying, well, he's going to play baseball. And Ernie knew that John Elway could not play baseball at the big league level. It just wasn't good enough. It wasn't good enough for the minor league level. So Ernie kept telling the ownership, listen, don't trade him. Don't trade him. And behind Ernie's back, they traded him to the Denver Broncos. And Ernie, to this day.
True.
Just, it kills him.
But there is a little bit of a difference. And see if you follow me. Peter, see if you follow this. All right? If Baltimore had held on to him and he refused to play, he becomes a pariah in Baltimore, which makes it even more difficult to eventually go back there because you're going to be hated. The fans are going to be like, I can't believe he doesn't want to play for us. I don't know if that would happen here. Like, if he refused to play, if the Jets held on to him and didn't trade him, the Jets become the villain. Like, would the maybe I'm wrong about this, and we can run it up the poll, take your calls. But, Michael, would the Jet fans turn on Lawrence, or would they understand?
I think they'd understand,
Joe Douglas,
but they would not
become
like
the bad guy for not dealing him.
Well, you got to be a bad guy in this case. You can't let a generational quarterback get away. Why? I'd say, well, what? You don't want to play in New York? Then I'd start a behind-the-back campaign that the guy's gutless and doesn't want the biggest stage.
But
he'd play for me.
That's
all there is to it.
Yeah, but that's not going to sell because everybody can see. Michael, everybody can see this is not someone who doesn't want to play in New York. This isn't somebody that doesn't like the
color. I know that,
green.
But you're trying to spin it to put pressure on him.
But would the spin work? Because the organization that's trying to do the spinning is the one that looks clueless, is the one that nobody trusts. I think the world would kind of understand. Why would the kid want to go here? They kill quarterbacks. They chew them up and spit them out.
And the thing is, you don't get a team like the Chargers, right? A team like even at a different time, if it was a Kansas City or an Indianapolis, a mid-market team, could get a certain level of sympathy. No one's given a New York team, an inept New York team, sympathy. They're not. They're going to say, mate, this is a good decision for you. Avoid it. I don't think he'll be villainized for it.
No, I don't think he's going to be villainized. I mean, you're playing hardball. I get that. You're playing hardball. But
I'm just saying all that spin isn't going to work. So then now your fan base turns on you. Joe, why aren't you trading this pick? Why aren't you trying to get us a bunch of draft picks? Why are you? Because then, well, let's say he doesn't play. And then you go into the 2021 season with possibly Sam Darnold again because you didn't trade him because you thought it would be a really weird situation that I think would actually work against the Jets. 99% of the time, I hear what you're saying, and it would totally work against the player. But the Jets have dug themselves such a hole here, I think they'd be the one organization would actually work against them.
But if the Jets get rid of Gase and bring in a really good coach, and he still doesn't want to play here, then he has no excuse. He can't say, well, you know what, MetLife Stadium or Florham Park is built on some burial grounds and there's a jinx. No. If they bring in competent people. Now, if Gase is still the coach, I can understand him saying, I'd rather go back to school. I'll take a big insurance policy out and that's all there is to it. Or I'm coming out, but I'm not playing for you. But if they get rid of Gase, he has no kick coming. You can't say historically the Jets have killed quarterbacks. They didn't kill Joe Namath.
I mean, but that was 50 years ago.
I know, but you can't blame the new coach for Adam Gase.
No, but we always get back to this becomes the Dolan conversation, right? Does it become ownership? Like, I don't know if they'll be able to win under the current construct of the team with Johnson, you know, in charge. You know, because what if Woody Johnson doesn't come back? Like, I don't know what we all assume that if Trump gets voted out, that Woody will come back and take over the team. Do we know that's going to happen?
I would think. I don't think that Biden would keep him as the ambassador to the UK. I'm not sure. But
no,
I would assume that they would get a new ambassador and he'd come back and run the team.
So Woody comes back. But, like, you know, Woody's track record is just as checkered as Chris's is. I don't know. You know, I don't know if this is just about Gase or is it just about the organization and how they haven't had a franchise quarterback in a long time. I'm not sure, but maybe it's just a ploy to make sure that the Jets do get rid of Gase.
I certainly don't want a 19-year-old, 20-year-old dictating who my coach is going to be either. Jets should know that you can't, if they're 0-16, you can't bring the coach back.
Right. No, of course. But I mean, maybe this just assures it because we've always had that kind of sneaking suspicion that maybe he's not going to be fired because he's so entrenched there that he's not going to be let go. But maybe he kind of can control what direction The coaches, I know, I hate that. I don't want some 19-year-old determining who's the next coach of my team, but you let some guy that never played for you determine who the coach is now. I'd rather have Trevor Lawrence determine who he wants to be coached by than Peyton Manning placing a phone call.
The thing that bothers me about, you know, we wake up today, and the trade deadline is next week in the NFL. We wake up today, and there's a report that the Jets are shopping Quinnen Williams. It was quickly shot down by our own Rich Cimini, who then reported that they're not shopping him, but if somebody blows him away with an offer. And here's my point about that. You know, the people that say everybody should be available, look how bad they are. At some point, you have to keep your best players. You can't keep trading away every good player you have for draft picks. Draft picks are air that you have to turn into something really good. You've gotten rid of Le'Veon Bell, who had 6 carries for the Chiefs with about a half a week of preparation and averaged about 5.7 yards per carry. Never did that with the Jets. You got rid of Jamal Adams. Quinnen Williams had a really good game against the Bills. If you watched him in the line play, he was putting pressure on the quarterback. He was making tackles. Guy's a good player. You can't keep trading away your best players. You know, I was talking with Andrew Gunling, our producer. He said the one guy that should be untouchable is Mekhi Becton. Yeah, he should be untouchable, and so should Quinnen Williams. At some point, you have to start collecting talent and not draft picks. The more draft picks you collect, the longer the rebuild is going to be. Do you know how long it's been for the Jets not making the playoffs? For not even being a 500 team? You can't keep going down this route. I'm not saying go out and get free agents. That's not what I'm saying. But you've got to keep your most talented players. I don't care what anybody offers for Quinnen Williams. Now, sure, if they will give you 2 number one, but nobody's going to do that. So you've got to keep your best players, Don. You can't keep emptying the deck.
But that's all that's being said by Rich Cimini, is that they're not shopping him. But they're listening to offers.
But now, why would you listen to offers on Quinnen Williams?
Because I would definitely listen to offers, because if some yo-yo gives you 3 first-round picks, then yes, he's traded. That's all that means.
But
is
that was the old. That was the same
down.
Thing they said about Jamal Adams. We're not shopping and we're listening. Well, you know, he ended up being traded.
Well, because he kind of forced the issue, Michael.
I get that, because he got ticked off, because they were probably making phone calls, or at least taking them actively. Because you could shut it down right away. Somebody calls up and you go, unless you got 3 first-round draft picks in your back pocket, I'm not even thinking about trading this guy. At some point, you've got to keep your best guys. You can't keep recycling and getting draft picks, because then it becomes a 6-year rebuilding plan. And if Joe Douglas thinks he's going to be here for all 6 years while they continue to just ship out their best talent, he's wrong. He's wrong. Woody could come in and go, I didn't hire this guy, out. I don't care if he has 4 years left. Out. Gase, out. So there's that possibility, too. At some point, you got to show me something. This is a GM who said at the beginning of the season, our team doesn't like the lack of respect that it's being shown.
Right.
Really? Looks like we were right on point, Joe. So when does it start to turn? When does it translate into wins?
Well, but I think we're agreeing. I think everybody agrees with you, Michael. And that's why the report is he's not being shopped. I'm sorry, and you're in a position when you lack a lot of talent, and you and 0-16 is on the table. Then, outside of Becton, who I just used a 6th overall pick for, I'm going to listen to whatever you have to say. It doesn't mean I have to say yes, and maybe somebody's is so desperate for him. Why should I go out there? Unless you're going to give me 3 first-round picks, I'm not taking any calls on Quinnen Williams. Well, maybe there's a guy out there that was going to offer you 2 first-round picks. Now he's not going to call? Take the call. What's the big deal? I want all my players to know. Hey,
so would you take a call on Mekhi Becton?
I just said I wouldn't take Becton because I just drafted the guy. And
I understand. Well, Quinnen Williams was drafted what? 3 years ago? 2 years ago? At what point do you say I'm not going to trade my first round draft picks like this?
All right, but still, right, yeah, to the logic, right, Peter, I would take a phone call on anybody. I never understood the whole logic of untouchable when there obviously can be a deal to get it done. Yeah, if somebody comes back and he says, I will give you 3 first-round picks for Becton, wouldn't you still make that deal even though you still believe in him?
If you make that deal, though, the train keeps going down the track and you're not collecting players, you're collecting air.
No, it's not air. See, air is salary cap, meaning somebody may not come here. But if you're a general manager and you have all of these picks, when you don't really have any talent whatsoever, Yeah, you need picks to be able to replenish that.
Well, by air, I mean it's just it comes out to your ability to make good draft picks. We have no idea what his ability to make good draft picks is. None. Well,
but obviously, when you're the general manager, you're going to believe in yourself and you're going to want as many picks as possible. They're not really good anywhere, right? I mean, they could probably improve at every position on the field, right? So that's why it's up for grabs. I think Williams is somebody that you want to build around. I think Becton is somebody you want to build around. But if somebody blows you away with an offer, it's a moot point. Anybody, nobody is going to offer even a first round pick for Williams, right? I mean, it's just that's not going to happen. That's not the way the trades work. When you make trades in the NFL, you're at a disadvantage. Look at the picks. They traded somebody today, got a sixth round pick. McClendon got like a sixth round pick. You don't get value in these trades, but you just keep the phone lines open just in case somebody blows you away. Why wouldn't you do that?
It just gets frustrating to me because, Don, you have to keep your best players. And we have always liked Joe Douglas. It seems to me he's trying to deodorize every single person that Maccagnan picked, which also makes me wonder about Sam Darnold's future here.
Of course.
He doesn't want any of Maccagnan's fingerprints on his team. But that's petty. If the guy's a good player, you keep him. I don't care who picked him. Because if you're going to keep Sam Darnold, that's the centerpiece of your franchise. And Maccagnan could always say, I picked him.
Right.
As bad as I was, I picked him. I don't think that Joe Douglas is small like that.
No.
Crazy.
I think he looks at this team that it's on the table that they're going to go 0-16 and realizes, I got a lot of holes to plug up here. And how do you plug them up? You plug them up with draft picks. So you collect as many draft picks as you can, and you keep those lines of communication open. Michael, if they were assured of Trevor Lawrence, like guaranteed they were going to get him, then it probably would make sense to trade Sam now. Because he's only going to be devalued as the second half of the season goes on, could get hurt. Certainly not going to improve his standing at all in the league because their team is god-awful.
Well, you're
right.
But
they can't do that because they're not assured that they're going to have Trevor Lawrence. But when you're 0-16, I mean, who are your best players when you're going to go 0-16?
Your best players are Quinn Williams, and your best players are Mekhi Becton. Those are your two best players.
Right. And the report is about Williams is that he's not shopping him, but he'll listen. I think that's a good tack to take for in any sport, in any situation. Hey, I'll take your call. Well, I'm not going to shut anybody down from making the phone call. Then once you make your offer, I can laugh at you and hang up the phone. But, Peter, why would you disconnect the phone on any player?
I'm for always having the phone open. I think if I'm the Jets, I'm thinking Becton, number one, and Williams, two, are very unlikely that I'm listening to much. But if you have something significant, we can have a conversation.
Let's go to the calls. 1-800-919-3776. We start with Kelly in Somers. Kelly, start it off.
You guys, got to chime in on this Trevor Lawrence situation. Long life Jet fan, 58 years old, and almost drove off the side of the road when I'm hearing this opening. It's the only glimmer of hope that we have. So you got to play hardball with him. Any number one pick is going to go to a 1-15, 0-16 team. So we can't have him dictate the terms.
But I guess the dream of most quarterbacks is like what Andrew Luck had. The only reason that the Colts got that pick was because Peyton was hurt. So they knew it was a good organization, although it turned out to be a bad organization for him because they never really built up an offensive line. They beat him up. But I agree with you, Kelly. Enough is enough is enough. You're playing here or you're not playing. At some time, you got to play hardball. I'm not going to let a junior from Clemson dictate where he's going to play. You're playing for the Jets or you're not playing at all. You're not.
I'm into that, absolutely.
All right, thank you for the phone call, Kelly. Let's go to Danny in Long Island. Danny.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Mike, just want to say if the baseball season ends tonight, it was an enjoyable season. The postseason I thought was really good. And a little bit of normalcy into 2020, a nice distraction from everything that was going on. So let's go Dodgers, win one for my late great father, and hopefully we go out with a great game. As far as the football is concerned, I remember you earlier, I think it might have been a Mets GM or somebody talking about trading Cespedes to somebody, and you said any general manager doesn't take a phone call should be fired for insubordination or incompetence or something. same situation. You always got to take the phone call. You think Jerry Jones knew he was going to get 37 draft picks for Herschel Walker when that phone call started? Who really, you know, everybody's tradable. Everybody has a value.
No, the thing that bothers me, I agree with that, but the thing that bothers me, the Jamal Adams thing started as they were taking phone calls. There's got to be smoke. I mean, Manish Mehta is the one who came out and said they're shopping him. So everybody else who covers the Jets said they're not shopping him. So let's say maybe it could be somewhere in the middle. I think it's all verbiage. It's all, let's parse every single word. Do the Jets want to trade Quinnen Williams? If they do, I think they're wrong. Take a phone call is not wrong.
In football, the window of a player's prime years are so small that if the Jets are so bad that they only have two players that they deem good, well, then by the time the Jets would ever be good, those two players will be long gone to their first or second free agency or injured and retired. So if you could get two or three solid picks, I think the Steelers had a compensatory pick that started three games at left tackle when their Hall of Fame left tackle, Mike DeCastro, was out. The Jets, these are the things you do. You get picks, and you never know what happens. I know with the Jets, it doesn't seem to happen that much, but you have to take the call.
But Danny, if you continue to trade your best players, you're just pushing the can down the road. You're never going to get good, ever, because you're always going to have young players that are not ready to win yet. Don't you want a 4 or 5 year veteran to be part of something that's ready to go? Quinnen Williams is a really good player.
I believe that they have a lot of room under the cap that if they wanted to get themselves an entirely new offensive line or defensive line next year, they could. And if you watch everybody in NFC East, you know you have to have an offensive line or you have nothing. So they certainly have enough cap space, and with some draft picks, they could redo that entire line or whatever they deem their most essential spots.
Well, we thank you for the phone call. It's interesting, though. You look at this, and you can't really say that they have any plan. Because this is a guy who rebuilt the offensive line. And, Don, what has the offensive line been other than a sieve? So, all right, he's going to have money to spend next year. Is he going to pick better players?
Yeah, he did well with Becton, right? So I think you could say that was a good pick. But everybody else that he's put together, this offensive line, has been awful, right?
Awful.
They all have been terrible. So that's on his resume, too, for sure. But when
did he really pick Becton, or was that the guy who dropped to him? Because the first pick of the first offensive line that went off the board was Andrew Thomas, and he's been a complete bust for the Giants. So Becton dropped to him. Who knows what he really would have picked?
Well, the Giants shocked everybody. You're right. So they had to be – I don't know if they were prepared to think that the Giants were going to go there at 4. Everybody was flabbergasted when they did that. But he made the pick. So I'm not going to sit here and say they got lucky. They got the pick, and he got that right. But as far as patchworking this offensive line, didn't do that great of a job.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
2020 has been an awful year for many, including this fly. So 98.7 ESPN and all of us here at the Michael K. Show want to make it better for you, our listeners, with 20 incredible prizes in 20 days. So make sure you're listening to find out how to win some amazing gifts to help improve your lifestyle. It all starts this Thursday, not next Thursday. This Thursday, Peter, October 29th, okay. Right here with the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
I know it's our own language, so I'm kind of crushing ourselves, but it's not like we're the only place with this narrative. I'm a little sick of the 2020 narrative.
What do you mean? Like the year?
Yeah, 2020. Oh, 2020 is so bad. Things are just going to be better once it's not 2020. I mean, things have been
nobody's
bad.
Saying it's going to be better in 2021, but we can all agree 2020 has been terrible.
Yeah, but I mean, everything's relative. I had a terrible 19. My 19 was worse than my 20.
Really?
That's right. So, I mean, everyone's situation is different. And I just hope that we're not putting too much into the end of 2020. Because what if 2021 is also bad?
But you know why you do that? Hmm. Because it gives you hope. So if 2021 turns out to be awful, okay, then you look to 2022.
But I would argue, Michael, that we need to stop blaming the year and blame and look around and see where the blame really is to be pointed. And
I think it's all on the ear.
Make decisions accordingly.
All on the ear.
So the people who are to blame pay the price.
Now, Spike in New Jersey.
See, I blame Spike.
I don't blame Spike, but he seems like he knows something. At least that's what he's saying on Twitter. So let's see exactly what he knows. Spike?
Well, hello, my friends. And 2020 has been a crappy year. You're right, Peter. It's become too easy to write it off that way. But it's not been a good year for me either. But I have you guys, and that makes it a good year. A couple of things. I want to put my wager for the winter book out early, Michael. You know, I'm 3-0-1 against you. And I think you're happy on all the results of it. And any programming changes, any new competition, I'm sticking my neck out there. My old turkey neck, and saying without any question in my mind, you will continue to dominate. Now, you may dominate a little differently, a little off the pace, but when all the words are said, programming is done, you will come past that finish line in a victory stance. That's my prediction, and I haven't been wrong yet.
Don, we all love Spike, but that was a lot of gobbledygook. He didn't say where we would finish. We're going to dominate.
First. You've been first. All you're right. Going to remain first. Listen,
it's hard to dominate in third.
I have a Sam Darnold analogy I want to run by my friends. You ready?
Right. Yeah.
I let this go. Audiences come in and out. You know my shtick. I broke it on Carlin last night. I love you all. And I said, we were all Sopranos fans. Sam Darnold to Trevor Lawrence is Bobby Bacala to Corrado Soprano Jr. Roll that around and think about it.
Wait, who? Say it one more time. Who
so
is to
Bobby
who?
Bacala? So Sam Darnold is the servant to Uncle Jr.
Sam Darnold, comparatively speaking, to Trevor Lawrence is what Bobby Bacala was to Corrado Soprano Uncle Jr. There's such a difference in levels. I'm very disappointed in Sam Darnold. I told Don yesterday, he'll corroborate it. I feel terrible. He's such a polite young fellow to go through that appearance. It's gut-wrenching to listen to. I mean, yeah, it's a job, and you do it well. But to come out week after week and watch him, how does a team play a reputable first half and then crap in the bed 4 yards in the second half? 4 yards.
Yeah, we thank you for the phone call. It's hard to believe. The 4 yards still stands out to me. Like, I can't believe that any team would just have 4 offensive yards in the second half. It's hard to comprehend that could happen in a professional league.
Well, here's you know when it happens? It happens when you're down 50 to nothing, right? The fact is, if you had a few yards, you maybe win the game. You only lost by a possession, right? You lost by 8 points. All right, the game was obviously very much not in their rearview mirror. The other teams only kicked field goals, right? You come up with one drive in the second half, you win the game. Or at least tie the game or have a chance to tie the game with a 2-point conversion. They couldn't even do that. It's incomprehensible. I don't think anybody is saying that Darnold doesn't have some responsibility, but people that are smarter than us are going to have to figure out exactly how much responsibility he did have. Some other general manager is going to have to figure that out because I think he's playing someplace else next year, guys. So,
you know, did you see Mike Vaccaro's column today in the Post?
I did not, no.
He listed all the good young quarterbacks, and he said the Jets and the Giants don't have any of them. He said the Jets and the Giants, all they do is frustrate you. He said there's no way that they have the same type of hope that fans in Cincinnati and in LA with the Chargers have. Those guys have something about them. Now, they have better supporting cast, but cool. Mike said that, and I agreed with the column was well written, well thought out. I just think that what we're seeing, I have a little more faith at this point in Daniel Jones than I do Sam, because Daniel Jones is only in his second year, and I think he shows more glimpses than Sam. But both teams have to be a little disappointed because you see players, even in bad situations, they shine every now and then. Now, Daniel Jones has shown every now and then. How many times does Sam shine? How many times?
Yeah.
The run?
You know, the stat that I saw today.
It's not enough.
Sam has been pressured 26.2% of his dropbacks. Only 4 quarterbacks are pressured more. And one of those, and on the top of the list, is Daniel Jones. at 29.2%. So the correlation is that neither of these teams have an offensive line. And that's why they're both, you know, stuck there. And I don't know who the other two quarterbacks are. They're in the top four. But I think that hurts. Now, eventually you're going to have to dig and see, all right, how much of it is on them. Because not every sack is the offensive line's fault, right? Not every interception is the wrong route that the wide receiver ran. But it's, you have to admit that it's no coincidence. The two quarterbacks that are leaving you wanting are behind the two worst offensive lines in football. So that's not a coincidence.
I'd like to see, I hear your stat, but I'd like to raise you and see how bad the Cincinnati Bengals offensive line is. That kid gets banged around every single game. Every game. He's been sacked more than these two guys. He's been pressured more than these two guys, and he shows.
Well, I don't know if that's the fact he's been pressured more. I'd have to see the stat. I agree with you. At least going into the year, Cincinnati was ranked the worst offensive line in football. I can't imagine it's improved that much. And if it has improved, it's probably because of the quarterback play that makes it look a little bit better. But Cincinnati's got some weapons that the Jets certainly do not have. See, Sam's in a deadly combination of bad offensive line, lack of talent, and the worst coach in football. I mean, how are you supposed to shine, Michael? How are you supposed to show anything when you've got a coach that looks like he's clueless and lost, no offensive line, and no talent? And what little talent they did have, they shipped out the door. So, I don't know. How would Tom Brady do? Or how would Peyton Manning do in circumstances like that? You know, that's...
I keep coming back to what Steve Young said. At some point, you got to say, get on my back and show. You play through all the
But that's a lot
the
to
trash.
Play through.
You just first have of all, to. But you got to show something, Don. But that, 4 yards?
First of all, that comment you keep going back to is a comment made about lack of talent. But it's not just lack of talent. It's lack of coaching and it's lack of an offensive line. I mean, all right, maybe he's got to show more. And that's why I do think that he holds some responsibility, because there are sometimes throws that have to be made that aren't made. There's decisions you have to make that you're not making. There's a lot less of them than most quarterbacks have. But you got to make the one or two throws that they give you during the course of the game, and maybe he's not doing that.
He's played five games this year.
That's a lot to overcome. That's
five games this year.
To overcome.
Three TDs and six interceptions. At some point, something I get it. He's under a lot of pressure. Again, so is Joe Burrow. I'll look up the stats during the commercial, but the bottom line is Joe Burrow's been hit. I watched it on one of the pregame shows more than anybody, that they were talking about maybe the Bengals should sit him rather than get him hurt.
Right. Yeah, and that's a problem. But are they as poorly coached? They do have more weapons than the Jets have. And
well, I mean, at some point, the Jets are saying this guy's an offensive genius.
That's ridiculous. That's not on the table. That's just a stupid comment by.
That's the guy who owns the team.
Doesn't make it less. It doesn't make it more intelligent because he owns the team. It's an ignorant comment. He's not a genius. The evidence is there. It's there in everybody's face. You cannot find one person, Michael, not a soul on the face of the earth, including Mike Tannenbaum that hired the guy in Miami, that could defend his performance this year. There's not a person on the face of the earth other than Chris Johnson. So you know what? Chris Johnson's wrong, okay? Nice man, ignorant on this subject. He is not a genius. He's far from a genius. He is right now, easily, the worst coach in football. He might be the worst coach in the last decade in the NFL. And it's an obvious conversation that when it's all said and done, he may go down as one of the worst coaches in the history of football. So genius is not on the table. Sorry, Chris Johnson. Marco knows more than you. Okay?
Wow.
That's done. That's been proven now.
Let's go to Ira.
Now we have to determine exactly how much of this could be on him. Joe Burrow doesn't have to worry about confidence, all right? He was on a bad team. He knew the team was going to be bad. So let's see if he continues to get battered around, Michael, 3 years from now, whether Joe Burrow's still a good quarterback. Because if he's getting his head beat in, he's going to be David Carr, all right? That's going to happen. But right now, we're talking about year three. With how many coaches, how many systems, no talent, the kid's probably shot. He has no confidence. So that factors in as well. They broke the kid.
Broke him in half. And I think he's fixable, by the way, just not here.
Right, so when you compare him to Burrow and Herbert, these are kids. They're kids. They're running around. They're happy to be in the NFL. They don't have a lack of confidence. They're brimming with confidence. But if they continue to be on bad teams and continue to get beat up, I'd like to see what Burrow is going to be 2 years from now, Peter, if he continues to get beat up pillar to post every Sunday, guess what? He's going to be a deer in the headlights, too. He's going to be seeing ghosts, too.
Why is he not seeing ghosts now?
Because he's a kid. He doesn't – because he knows he's the situation.
He's the same age as Sam.
He's got some talent and he's got some coaching. But eventually, it's going to start to bother him. We weren't having this conversation about Sam Darnold in his first year. We thought, hey, this kid looks like he's going to be pretty good. Right? Now he looks worse. Why? Because of him or because the team's gotten worse and the talent's gotten worse and the line's gotten worse and the coaching has gotten worse? Maybe Burrow's a better quarterback. We're going to see. But there's a kid that played, you know, seven games compared to another kid that's on year three of just a clueless, lack of direction organization.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
John in New Jersey. John.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I'm curious to find out if you guys have any MVP votes so far, or if it's going to be close, or if somebody can run away with it.
Well, I would say right now, John, Seager, if the Dodgers win.
Yeah.
And I think that Arozarena, if the Rays win. Well, things could change, though. Somebody could step up as a hero. Let's say that Kershaw comes in and wins Game 7 in relief. Then he's 3-0 in the World Series. He might get it. So, but right now, I'd say, wouldn't you agree, Don, it's Seager and Arozarena?
Yeah, I think those are the two, definitely.
Let's see. Brian and Bayonne. Brian.
Hey, guys. After week two, I had spoken to, and Michael and Don were both adamant that neither the Jets nor Giants should take Trevor Lawrence if it came to that. And one other quick question for Mike.
I was not. That you got that wrong.
I believe, okay, I'd have to look back.
I said there's no way that they would take Trevor. I never said that.
Okay, and do you think the National League is going to keep the DH going forward, or do you think it's a one-year experiment?
I think they're going to keep it, Brian. I really do, and I think baseball wants them to keep it. And for those that were so afraid that it was going to stop managing along at home and all these great maneuvers, it's not brain surgery, double switches. It's not. And to see a pitcher just flail helplessly at a pitch, it doesn't do it for me. I think we've had a lot of things to argue about in terms of managerial moves, so I think it's going to be backed up.
Hey, two things, all right? First of all, it's more entertaining, and that baseball has to try to entertain its audience, right? And also, I think the Players Association would want it because it could keep jobs. I mean, there's veterans who can't run anymore, can't play the field anymore, that can stay in baseball longer because of the DH for all 30 teams rather than just having it for 15. But back, I was the one that said I wouldn't take Lawrence early in the season. I don't remember saying that it was like a no-brainer, but I was the one that said that. He's probably asking, you know, how I feel now. That why did I change my mind? I changed my mind because now you just see what's happening. I mean, you fast forward four or five games, six games later, Michael, the narrative has completely changed to where.
But how would you have said you wouldn't have taken him? Because the only way they would have taken him if they were 0-16 and 1-15.
Well, because I don't know. I thought that maybe Sam played well, but they lost games. Maybe they're losing games because of the defense. You know, maybe they would go, you know, 2-14 to be a lot more competitive. Did I think that they would go 0-7 and really not be competitive in any game? I mean, the most competitive they've been, I guess, is last week when they lost by 8. Right? And the Denver game. Otherwise, they've been getting blown out and embarrassed. They're the only team that is undefeated against the spread, like, in a bad way. So, and now I think there's legitimate concerns about, like, Darnold moving forward, the way they've damaged him or whatever. But going into the season, I felt there was a chance that they could be bad, but, you know, well, Sam could still be somebody that could be salvaged. I'm not sure about that anymore.
I mean, and let's remember, I mean, so often the conversation in the summer was about, what will Sam do to sort of shore up his position here? Like, we all said, Sam needed to show something this year. And unfortunately, whether the blame is Sam or Gase, he hasn't shown what we wanted to see.
Let's go to Dennis in Huntington. Dennis.
What's crack-a-lacking, guys?
Hey, what's going on?
I do not agree with the whole coaches make quarterbacks conversation. You guys basically all agree that quarterbacks need a good coach in order to succeed in this league. What if
you don't
Patrick
agree.
Mahomes was on the Jets?
I don't know. I mean, it's a great question, but Andy Reid's a hell of an offensive coach.
And what about Tom Brady leaving the Patriots? All of a sudden, they're scoring.
Well, you're
on
talking about an established quarterback.
I mean, the base has already been set, Dennis. I mean, he's been coached up to this level by great coaches, so it doesn't mean that he's going to regress to the mean because he goes to Bruce Arians, who's also a pretty good coach.
Come on. We're talking about developing quarterbacks, and I don't care. Trevor Lawrence, as good as he is, Michael, cannot step onto the NFL field and just instantly be good without coaching. All right, it's too big of a leap. He has to develop. You have to coach him up. Now, some guys get it right away and take off, but you think he just walk right on and have you or me coach him and then he'd still be great because he's just a tremendous athlete? You might be able to do that in the NBA, but for a quarterback as a young kid, Trevor Lawrence is going to come into the National Football League, Michael, be a deer in the headlights. And then you hope that with good coaching and four preseason games, and then and slowly but surely he'll mature into a great NFL quarterback. He just can't walk onto the field and be superhuman.
I would tell Dennis this, of the four major sports, the football coach is the most important coach that can impact an entire organization.
Without even any question. Without any question, Michael. You can't overcome bad coaching.
Now, I don't know. I've seen bad managers win World Series. But I don't know who I'd have second or third. I think baseball might be fourth, but do you think hockey, the coach is more important than basketball?
It's about the same, I would think. There's a lot that goes into coaching hockey with the line combinations because the guys don't stay on the ice quite as often. But, you know, basketball, Michael, yeah, a good coach can make a difference, but I think you put LeBron James on with a bunch of really good players, I think you could you'll be okay, right? How are you going to be okay? You take all the best players in football. Do you think that you can just have, you know, the worst coach in football win a championship for? I don't think so.
Although Barry Switzer kind of showed won? That. Barry Switzer?
Well, he didn't touch it. Well, listen, we joke about Barry Switzer, but the guy knew how to coach. He was a great
coach.
He
wasn't bad. We just think he lucked into what he got.
I just think he just knew not to touch it and mess around with it. But
bad?
You think,
we played this game, Don. Remember? We really struggled here.
Well, I mean, in terms of baseball, I don't want to disparage the guy, but Ned Yost was thought of around baseball as a terrible manager. He took two straight Kansas City Royal teams to the World Series and won one.
But baseball's
one. Terrible
so
manager.
Than football.
Right, that's the last one. I'd say baseball is the last sport, Peter, in terms of how a manager will impact whether you win or lose.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think you can win with a bad coach in football.
No, I don't think it's possible. I really don't.
And now, if you do have a head coach that's not great, His coordinators are outstanding then.
Yeah, that's a good point too. You could have like just Hall of Fame caliber, you know, coordinators, right? Was Steve Owens a great head coach, or did, you know, having Tom Landry and Vince Lombardi as his coordinators? I think that's probably going to help you, you know, down the road. Now Dan Marino obviously went to a Super Bowl in his rookie year. He had Don Shula as his coach, right? I mean, That's going to help. But don't give me Tom Brady went to Tampa as your evidence. I mean, Tom Brady's an established quarterback. Trevor Lawrence is going to need to be coached.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. It's the Michael K. Show.
Jeff Passan, Don has a real problem with your hot take yesterday about Halloween. I agree. I hate Halloween.
I just don't understand you can have that opinion, both of you, when you have kids. What, do you hate children, Jeff?
Are you accusing me of hating Halloween?
That's what the tweet said. That's what Michael presented to me.
No. His original tweet said, "My annual tweet that Halloween is the most overrated holiday. Thank you." My response was, "It is abundantly clear you don't have children, which is no surprise because who would procreate with you?"
He tried to sabotage you, Mr. Steve Young, number one. He gave me bad information that got me upset with you under false pretenses. That's an awful job by Michael. Jeff, my apologies. You're number one in good standing. We're going to move on.
This is the Michael K. Show.
The saboteur. He's the Phil Jackson of the show.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Unbelievable. Stuff that comes out of
it really is unbelievable. I agree 100%.
It is. It's unbelievable. Got a lot to talk about. By the way, it's 39 degrees in Arlington. 39 degrees in Arlington, so they will have the roof closed for Game 6 of the World Series tonight. Tony Gonsolin against Blake Snell. Snell's working on normal rest. He's got to give them a little bit more than five. I know that's what you look for now, but that bullpen is gassed, so that's an important part of it. The NBA seems to be moving forward where they will start their season on December 21st. This way, get the Christmas games in, which will get ratings. From everything that I've read and people that I've spoken to, they look at this and go, they really, really got scared off by the low ratings, and they just realize that you're not going to get the same ratings in the summer as you would if you have it when it normally is supposed to be. But it was still, you know, it's still in June, and the finals are actually ending in the middle of October, and they didn't get ratings. So I just think it's the year, let's put it that way. But if you do start, and training camp starts on December 1st, Don and Peter, you know what kind of a deadline you're putting on teams? I believe 2 weeks before is when free agency starts. The Knicks don't have anybody on their team, essentially. I think they have six guaranteed contracts. How are they going to put together a roster in that amount of time? And if you're the Lakers and you have a team on the floor on December 21st, and the star of your team is 36 years old, you think LeBron James is going to play? He might not even play Christmas Day when you're supposed to have that big, 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 big rating. LeBron James might not be on the court.
Well, Danny Green said that veterans will not play. He doesn't think veterans will play. And so now you're going to have a revolt on your hands, Michael? The NBA can't afford to have that.
I'm going to need more information on this than just Danny Green. But, yeah, I mean, that would be problematic. I don't use the Knicks as the example because you give them 2 weeks or 2 months. It won't really matter who they play.
No, this is a different these are different people. Give them a chance.
Sure. You're right. We're starting fresh. But, yeah, this is problematic.
I think that teams that are set are going to be better off than teams that are not. The Knicks are not set. They have a new coach. They're trying to implement different defensive strategies, things like that. And all of a sudden, you're going to tell them to do that in 3 weeks. 3 weeks. All right, your team reports on December 1st. You're going to play on December 24th. Come on. I understand you want to avoid what happened this year and you want to reset the calendar to what it was, but do it over a period of time. I just don't think it's healthy for the league to start up that quickly, especially for teams like the Heat and the Lakers and teams that were in the conference finals. You're really asking a lot.
But so what do you think you start? Mid-January?
You got to push it a little bit. I mean, are they that desperate for Christmas ratings?
I see, that's the difference. See, like, the NHL's already said January 1st, and there's already rumblings it might take even longer than that, right? Because they've got issues of Canada allowing the travel, and there's just a lot of moving parts that the NHL has to deal with that maybe the NBA does not. But what the NBA's faced with is, why were the ratings so low? If it's just because of the timing is one thing, but there are many people that believe that it might have been the political aspect of it. The NBA wants to have that Christmas showcase, have the ratings be great, and everybody breathe a sigh of relief, like, okay, all right, everything's back to normal. And you're not going to know that if you miss the Christmas window, right? Because what's the next opportunity? The next opportunity is going to be in the postseason, which likely will be later than usual, and you're not going to know. And I think they just want to know. But at what price? As Michael said, you're going to have teams that just aren't going to have enough time to be ready. You might have the Lakers on Christmas Day and no LeBron James because he's not going to want to play. Do you want to have that?
And believe me, LeBron James has the cachet and the power to say, I'm not playing. They're not going to cut him. They're not going to get rid of him. They're not going to dock him pay. It's going to be part of load management. I'm not playing. I'm not playing. I played to a time that I'm not supposed to. My body needs a certain amount of time to recover. I'm not playing, and you're not going to do anything about it.
And you know that LeBron, even if he doesn't say to do it, by LeBron doing it, other players will probably file suit and say, I'm not going to do it either. Right? That's going to be what happens.
For sure.
And can you afford in a star-driven league like the NBA to have a nationally televised game between, you know, the Lakers and the Clippers, say, and none of the stars are in the game?
Why don't we listen to Danny Green? This is him on the Ringer's NBA show. Here's Danny Green.
I think most guys, if they said we start in December, I think they're like, I'm not going to be there. Right. If I had to guess, because we have a lot of vets on our team. LeBron's been in the finals 10 years out of his 17 years, which is unbelievable mentally. You know, it's training to do that. And to have that quick of a restart, I wouldn't expect to see him there. I wouldn't expect to see him probably for the first month of the season.
And then if he does relent and play, you're going to see injuries. The body needs time to recover. It just does. Now, on yesterday, they did the a Zoom meeting with Steve Nash. And Ian Eagle did the questioning, and they had, you know, questions from fans and stuff like that. And I watched it for a while. And one thing that Steve Nash said to me that just jumped out at me, and I wanted to report it to all of you that might not have seen it. He said one of the most important things that he's going to do is to implement defensive strategies, and the Nets' defensive strategy is going to be to defend the paint. And I kind of scratch my head. I go, defend the paint? What is this, 1978? Every single thing with the NBA is beyond the perimeter. You got to defend the three. You don't defend the paint. How much action is in the paint in the NBA? I thought that was very, very curious. So you're going to pack people into the paint, slough them off, and all of a sudden just give people wide open threes? That's all people do is shoot threes. They don't ever shoot twos. Now, I understand they'll take the two that's wide open in the paint, but if that's going to be your defensive philosophy, that's a little scary.
Yeah, it's weird.
Don't you want to defend the three and then obviously make sure nobody gets any easy points in the paint? But you'll give the 2 points in the paint rather than giving a three-pointer to an open three. That was odd. Odd. But I don't know if he checked in yet with KD and Kyrie. I mean, right. They might have other ideas.
I guess they'll
that would be a little out
run.
Of step with where the league is right now.
You think?
By the way, it's almost as if he was on the team that sort of was the precursor to the league being this way. Nash yeah. teams gunned.
So that's going to be an interesting dynamic to watch them. And we opened the program today with the story out of Clemson where Trevor Lawrence is kind of tippy-toed back off his stance that he's definitely coming out after his junior year. Now he said, well, I'm not quite sure. And that can only be one thing. The thought of being drafted by the Jets so frightens me and the people that are advising me that they told me to say this. So I believe that he is going to come out. He's trying to create a little leverage. He's trying to show the Jets this is not going to go down as easily as you think. But as I said at the beginning of the show, and I'll repeat right now, if in fact he gets the Jets are 0-16 or 1-15, they get the number one pick. And Trevor Lawrence comes out and says, I'm not going to play for you. You pick Trevor Lawrence. Especially if you think he is as transcendent as everybody thinks he is. Now, if you have doubts about him, then you could play the old okey-doke, say how much you love him, but since he doesn't want to play for us, then go get the greatest package of draft picks and players that's ever been gotten since the Herschel Walker deal. But if you really think he's that good, if you think he's an Andrew Luck, if you think he's a Peyton Manning, you say, yeah. You either play for us or you never play this year. And he'll play. Well, he will play. It's all a bluff.
Well, here's the difference between Eli and everybody else is that Trevor can go back, right? And now he's got to make the decision. Like, you can't just wait till the draft to declare, right? He's going to have to declare or not. I got to do the investigation if I'm the Jets and find out what's the issue here. And what if Trevor Lawrence's people say to the Jets, if you're going to draft him, if tell us right now, are you going to draft him? Oh, we're going to stay in school. We do not want to play for you under any circumstances.
See, but the Jets don't have to say a word and make him declare because he can't go back.
So that's the interesting thing. What is he willing to do? Is he willing to just... Because the Jets are going to take him. Even if the Jets say they're not going to take him, unless they trade the pick, Michael, they'd be foolish not to take him, right, at this point.
Unless they believe in Sam Darnold. And then they would trade the pick, and then they could reload on several fronts. But, again, I'm not going to let anybody dictate to me what I'm going to do. Now, if he wants to take the chance of, you know, he could, like what Peyton Manning's group did, they talked to Bill Parcells, and so you're going to take him first. And Parcells would not commit to taking him first. He would not commit to the Manning family. That's why Peyton went back. Not because he didn't want to play for the Jets. He wanted assurance that he was going to be the number one pick. And Bill Parcells would not give the assurance, so he went back. They said he wanted to experience his senior year in Tennessee. Whatever. He ends up going to the Colts. It worked out great for him. But if they go to the Jets and go, do you want, are you going to take him or not? You know, we're exploring all options. Yeah, so let him declare. Because once he declares, he can't come back out. Once he gets an agent, he can't go back in.
Right. Otherwise, if he just wants to sit out the entire year, which, again, I don't think he would want to do that. This is a kid that apparently, according to Feinbaum, doesn't want to stay in school because he's bored. Right? He just feels like he's done everything he's had to do. So if somebody is not going to stay in school, Michael, do you think he wants to leave, be eligible for the draft, and just refuse to report to the Jets and sit for a year and not play?
I don't think he will. I mean, that's why if I'm the Jets, I'm playing hardball, Don, because I know he doesn't want to sit. And I'm making him sit. But what egg on the face for the Jets. The fact that this kid said this today is immeasurably a big hulk of yolk on this guy's face. Well, or on the team face, I mean. Can you imagine? That's the only reason he's hesitating, because he wants to have some kind of leverage and some kind of ability to pull out if, in fact, the Jets get that number one pick. That's it. Any other team that has a chance to get the number one pick, he would never have said what he said today. This is all about the Jets. This is how they have painted themselves in the eyes of college kids, people around the NFL. That's how destroyed this brand is right now.
And you have to think this is not just about Gase, because I think anybody on the outside looking in would think that Gase is gone. Now, we're a little wonky about it just because we've been around this team and we got a sense that maybe it's not a fait accompli, but I think anybody outside would say this team's destined to go 1-15, 0-16. They're going to fire the coach. This is how your organization now is perceived around football, where the best player coming out of the draft doesn't want to play for you. You got to straighten that out. Like, so it's really important. If I'm the Jets right now, I've got to try to see if I can't, like, maybe I fire Gase now. And then I start really aggressively looking for the successor, starting to think, all right, what can I do to make this attractive to Lawrence? I know you don't like kids dictating, but this is a franchise that signed Boomer Esiason, if you remember. Granted, it was a different regime, different owner. But they signed Boomer Esiason because when Reggie White visited with the Jets, Reggie's like, man, if they had a legit quarterback, I'd sign. They go out and sign Boomer Esiason, and he still went to Green Bay. So sometimes you do things to get that player. So if the indication is that you got to change your image, don't you have to start changing that image now? And fire Gase?
Yeah, but here's the one fly in the ointment, though, Don. If you fire Gase now,
right,
and you get an artificial bump from a new coach being there, which sometimes does happen, even the Texans won with Romeo Crennel, you might lose the pick. Maybe they want them to continue to lose. Maybe they think Gase is the best chance to lose every single game. As long as you fire him at the end of the year.
Yeah, but what you're going to do is you're going to have Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator, be the head coach.
Well, he won games with the Browns.
Yeah, but it's an offensive problem,
that's a
right?
Fear.
But the thing is, it's an offensive problem. You know, this offense isn't going to get better under Greg Williams.
But they could breathe. The whole team could breathe. They take a breath, they might run into a win.
Listen, they can run into a win, but I still think that might be enough. Is Jacksonville going to lose out?
They might.
I don't know. I mean, they played. I don't think they're going to lose out. They're a better team than the Jets. I don't know if changing the. Now, if you change the coach and you brought in like a legitimate head coach right now and to can help the offense to get better. Is Greg Williams going to make the offense better? Or is Greg Williams just going to be a placeholder knowing that he's going to be out of a job at the end of the year?
But the Browns offense played better under Greg Williams than it did under Kitchen. So if the problem is, in fact, Gase, and you remove Gase, then Loggins takes over completely the offense, and maybe it does become better. I'm just saying that's probably why they're not firing him right now.
Don, have you ever considered they bring in like a two-headed monster and have Loggins and Messina do it?
Listen, now you're winning. That's a win right there.
But, now, we always talk about Eli being the guy who managed to get out of playing somewhere he didn't want to play. Are there examples of the kid didn't want to play there, did it reluctantly, and then it worked out? Can you ever turn the person truly into a believer if you draft them and you say, you know what, you're coming here?
I can't think of one. The big ones are Elway traded, Eli traded. And remember, one of the reasons that San Diego was able to do what they did, Michael, is because they were getting a quarterback in return.
Right.
Right, so they got Phillip Rivers. So,
and a great
package. And they got a lot back, too. So, you know, the thing is that they were able to make that. Would they have made that deal if they were just going to get picks and not get a quarterback? Or whether they just said, sorry, Eli, you're just going to have to live with this. They made it easier. So, no. I mean, in sports in general, Eric Lindros, the Nordiques had to trade him. I don't know. Can you think of, Michael, in any sport where a guy flat out didn't want to play there, they drafted him anyway and convinced him?
I can't remember.
I can think of players that were traded. You know, Keith Hernandez crying when he was traded to the Mets and ended up working out great. Right?
I remember Paul O'Neill wasn't thrilled when he got traded to the Yanks.
Right. I mean, we've seen that in trades where you don't have any control whatsoever, because this was way before, you know, no trade clauses and no movement clauses. But I can't think of anybody in any sport where I don't want to be drafted by that team. They drafted him anyway and convinced him into working out.
One quick note on the Mets. Deshar Thosar, who covers the Mets for the Daily News, says that MLB owners vote on Steve Cohen's approval to own the Mets expected to come this Friday. As of now, he has one firm no vote. I believe that's Jerry Reinsdorf, who's aligned with A-Rod. And Jerry also voted against Steve Cohen when he was trying to buy the Dodgers. And two others on the fence. That still wouldn't be enough to scuttle it. The only way you're scuttling this deal is if de Blasio does, in fact, decide that he's not going to approve the ownership, because the Mets own, the city owns the land on which Citi Field sits, and they own Citi Field. And there's a codicil in that contract that if there is a sale of the team, the city has a right of approval. Would de Blasio go out on a limb like that and stop this? And when I said that to somebody in the inner workings of everything that's going on, I said, would he have the onions to do that? He said, didn't he have the onions to say no to Amazon? He told Jeff Bezos no.
But what would be the political motivation to do that?
I think it has something to do with what has gone on with the hedge fund, you know, the problems that they've gotten into.
Okay.
The political motivation is that de Blasio is a very liberal mayor and probably wants to make it tough for a multi-billionaire. I'm not rolling over because somebody is rich. That's what he did with Bezos.
Or does he feel that New York City benefits more by having Alex Rodriguez and Jennifer Lopez on the team?
I don't know.
Because at the end of the day, it's about what's best for your city, right? I mean, I would think that having an excited, winning franchise is good for New York City. And, you know, so...
De Blasio is a Red Sox fan anyway.
Is that true?
That is true.
Yeah, well, very true.
I mean, I don't think he really cares, but he...
Yeah, if he does, it's going to be a political maneuver. He doesn't care if what's
he
good
did
for
make,
the city.
But he did make the big mistake of always saying he was a Red Sox fan. An example where not being a fraud really came back to haunt you for no reason. Just be a fraud.
So the last two mayors of New York City have been Red Sox fans?
No, Bloomberg ended up being a Yankee fan, right?
Ended up. By the way,
doesn't count, Peter, right?
No, not if you say end up. is there a more Fugazi? I found the one more Fugazi baseball fan than me.
Who's that?
It really is LeBron.
When I brought this up the other day, you laughed at me.
No. I thought about it now. That when I saw him tweet earlier, you know, one more game, Dodgers, let's go. I'm like, wait a second. This is the third team you've rooted for publicly? That's me. He's literally the Peter Rosenberg of the NBA. Complete baseball fraud.
A couple of people on Twitter remind us Jim Kelly wouldn't sign with the Bills. He signed with the USFL. Didn't want to play in Buffalo. Then he still lives in Buffalo. He's absolutely adored there. He's a god in Buffalo, so it worked out. But he did sign with the USFL.
Yes,
Houston
Gamblers.
Gamblers.
And then ended up for a very short fragment of time a New Jersey General. I have that Sports Illustrated with him on the cover.
I've heard that's very valuable.
Why wouldn't it be? Back when just because it's like a magazine. I'm going to show it to my kids and they're going to look at it.
Oh, by the way, for anyone listening, a magazine is like the internet but on paper.
Wow.
You know, there have been times, I don't know if this happened with your kids, Michael, where
I know where you're going.
where I give them a picture or a book and they try to make the picture bigger?
Yes, yes. I sometimes do that at the age of 59.
No, you don't.
No, you do, because you're just so used to... I read the newspapers now online, but, you know, Jody, in order for the kids to actually realize what newspapers are, she can, although I have the subscription that I read on the iPad, she gets the Times delivered to the house so they can see a physical newspaper in the house.
So they can see what piled up garbage looks like?
Yeah, what we put in recycling.
They can see where recycling... It's a good recycling lesson. Now, Michael, do you want to tell us about what's going on with today's picture?
Oh, that? Fordham roasted me many years ago, mm-hmm. a Fordham roast, to raise money for the athletic department.
Okay.
And Bill Gallo, the late, great Bill Gallo, the last great cartoonist, sports cartoonist in the world,
yep.
He drew that.
But what is it? What's going on with it? What's it saying?
I'm being roasted in a pan.
Yeah.
Oh, it says K's on the pan, and it has Bill Gallo's signature.
Oh, that's actually pretty cool. Well, I have nothing to say about that.
I was there. Might have been the last time that I saw your mom. Your mom was there.
Yeah.
And it was really just a... I felt terrible for him, Peter. I don't know if Michael remembers this. One of the roasters, and it was a star-studded panel. It was David Cohn. Right? Mitchell Modell. Tim McCarthy was one of the roasters.
Mm-hmm. My uncle.
What year are we talking about here?
What was it, Michael? 04? 03?
04, something like that, 05.
Okay.
And it was right at that moment that they were clearing the tables.
This is like a Wonder Years moment. It was at that moment I knew. Go ahead.
So there's a Tavern on the Green, right, Michael?
Yep.
Wow,
and
classic.
They're cleaning the tape, so all you're hearing is clanging. You couldn't hear Tim.
And Tim then had who was some the nasty roast stuff to say, too.
And who was the roast master?
Oh, I forget.
It was not the guy now, but the one before.
Ed Hospodar.
So Ross is the guy now, right?
Who are you
Who was the one before?
Ross
Famous.
Who?
Ross First Geller. Name. It was Ross Geller.
No, not Ross.
Lowe becomes the first player to hit two opposite.
It's not Lowe, it's Lau.
Possible?
The bald guy that's like the roast master that he's the... Anyway.
Sherman Helmsley.
Oh, yeah, I forget who it was.
Jesus.
Yeah, I have
like
a good memory
big
of
name
it.
Guy.
We have to break. We have a guest coming up.
So anyway, he had to come on and actually apologize for the venue because you couldn't hear Tim roast Michael because the dishes were clanging. And, I don't know how funny Tim would have been anyway,
Tim was
but
hot.
It would have been nice for him to be heard.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.